It's true, because he never wants to eat her food. All those Sunday soups and stews she finds 3 days later, sitting untouched on the stovetop. It's a woman's humiliation.
You could help Mommy with the cooking, he says coldly. At least when you're around.
Her face grows hot. She feels stupid, ashamed. One night she dreams she is a clog, a tangle of lint and dirt and hair jammed in the curve of a drain pipe. One night she dreams she is a black and tan puppy lost in a bull ring, begging for directions to the East Village. I must do something. She, Lucia Bach, is a doer of things. Like Ma. It comes to her through a series of coincidences. Signs, you could say. One night she is lying in her small bed in her small room, staring up at the night sky. From the cafe tables below, bits and tangles of conversation drift and rise.
A shaman cleansed my soul. Have you tried it?
The next day it happens at the office. One of the interns asks if she knows anything about the plant medicine retreats in the jungle,
the ones run by shamans.
No, but she overheard some tourists talking. Why do you ask? She says.
I thought it might make a good article, he says, so earnest.
It happens the third time at the farmacia, when she stops in to buy vitamins. Ana Maria smiles. They exchange pleasantries.
¿Cómo está?
And she mentions nothing of the itch under her skin or the burn in her chest. But today, quietly, respectfully, Ana Maria asks if, not to intrude or anything, but only as a suggestion, a matter of curiosity, if she is interested, she would like to visit a curandero. No, not a shaman, not the ones in the jungle. A curandero. A traditional medicine man, a healer, here in Cuenca. She could refer her to such a person. Three coincidences. This adds up to a sign. She feels grateful, blessed, calm once more, as the recipient of the universe's guidance. The consultorio is located on a quiet side street in an inconspicuous, unmarked house. In the waiting room, a shrine to the Virgin Mary, a glass case displaying foreign perfumes. Jovan, Lancome, Chanel. Another with packages of vitamins and other Western medicines. The curandero must be close to her in age, but the skin of his face is loose, jowly. His nose and chin protrude with a shine. A witch. No, a gnome. But wearing a crown of red feathers and a white button-down shirt with decorative stitching, a bit pirate-like, stained with sweat at the armpits. Yet there is something about this man she instinctively trusts, some spark of kindness. He greets her in his office.
I am Don Gonzalo. What brings you here?
He asks. He asks many questions. About her habits and routines, her sleep and meals and bowel movements, her dreams and daily stresses. He observes her carefully, her eyes, her neck, her hands, her feet, as if he knows it is too easy to lie with words.
Debilidad, he says.
A general weakness due to spiritual intrusions. He will perform a ritual cleansing. A limpieza. She sits on a low stool, close to the floor. He fetches a large sprig of dried herbs, bound together like a feather duster. She closes her eyes, hears the rustle of leaves, the flurry of air as he fans and beats it over her head, while emitting high-pitched chirps. He spits into his hands, touches her hair. Then he passes two eggs over her body and chants. To expel the malevolent spirits from her body, he later explains. He lights a tall candle, rings a bell, inhales a puff of cigarette, blows the smoke into her mouth. Then he swigs from a bottle of spirits. 1 minute she smells the alcohol, the next she feels a spray on her face. For a moment she hovers outside herself, envisions the scene through her daughter's eyes.
"Mama, why is that man dusting you?"
He wraps her head with a towel, swigs, blows flame.
"Like a dragon, Mama."
Her eyes clench shut instinctively. Heat roars up her back. But there is no fear, no doubt, only faith. When the ceremony is over, he presses a small crystal into her hand, a talisman for strength, and prescribes her a tonic, 7 drops to be taken in a glass of water twice a day. As she walks back toward the cafe, she feels emptied, restored. She marvels at the patterns in the cobblestone sidewalk, admires the large colorful houses, their stalwart gates. Even the shards of glass on top of the security walls seem to radiate a friendly glint. She returns to him. The next time, she asks about his family. He has 5 children. The youngest, a boy of 16, studies the traditional ways. "And the others?" she asks. "The others go their own ways," he says. The next time she asks if she may ask him more questions. She works for the gringo newspaper, she explains.
He is a modest private man, not exciting for the gringos. The tourists, they want to know about the exotic, the mystical, not what he sees with his eyes.
"What does he see with his eyes?" she asks. The bluntness of his answer surprises her.
"You are unhappy," he says. "You keep things inside. You cannot find peace with all these things trapped inside, like a poison. Like this, you will not find the correct path."
Trapped. Poison. She is annoyed, practically offended by these words she finds both trite and vague. But she presses him.
"What, then, is the correct path?" she asks. "Ay, chinita," he says, smiling. "You are not ready. When you are ready, you will let go, find the ties that bind. Only then can you find the path."
Ready? She has moved across an ocean to find the path. The new path. The new air. The new life, untethered to the complications of her past. The life of her own creation. She returns to her daughter, whose skinny brown arms encircle her neck, who laughs and shouts and screams and cries. Wild and free, Essie is full of joy. She disappears again with the shepherd girls into the campo. This is happiness. That afternoon, she and Manny sit together quietly on the stoop outside the casita. "Where does she go?" she asks.
"She has friends," he says.
She lets out a sigh.
He echoes it, spits out a mouthful of watermelon seeds, turns to go inside.
At night, they lie under the mosquito net, Essie asleep between them. She reaches over, puts her hand on his chest.
He grunts, turns away.
In the city, she lies in her small bed in her small room, mulling over the curandero's words. Unhappy, trapped inside, the ties that bind.
"Ma, what happened to Ba?"
"Your father died in an accident."
"What kind of accident?"
"A car accident."
"But you loved him. You really loved him. Didn't you, Ma?"
"I did, Xiaomi. Once I did."
And then she thinks, "I don't love him. I have never loved him. and love is everything. It is as simple as this, and she cannot think why it seemed so complicated before. The ties that bind. There is only one man she has ever loved. She can hardly remember what it looked like, that shabby apartment in the East Village, twin mattress on the floor of the living room, security monitors where she watched the store. Why did she leave him in the first place? Then it comes to her. I gave up love for a baby, traded my soulmate for a child. She is shocked, ashamed that she has put this into words. These words, bad words, hurtful like racial slurs, words that should not be thought at all and certainly never voiced. A mother loves her child unconditionally, without regret. But now, encapsulated in words, that tinge of resentment ignites a physical pain, like something in her gut has caught fire. It rises, shoots up to inflame her esophagus, throat, coat or tongue. So she rolls it into a bolus and shoves it back, but it lodges in her tonsils and she hacks and hacks until it pops back up and again she must swallow it down. For a few hours she clutches her belly, lies prone in her bed. It gets worse. It gets better. It gets worse. Perhaps it has been weeks, months, years she has been swallowing it down, and her throat, her esophagus, her mouth, even her teeth, now hurt from the effort. The curandero. He is right. She yearns to hear his voice, but she doesn't know where he is. Somewhere in Israel. She has his old cell phone number, and sometimes when she's at the office, she dials it discreetly and it rings, but then an automated voice clicks on. Sometimes it informs her there are technical issues with the number, temporarily out of service. Other days it says the mailbox is full. Sometimes it rings and rings. It makes no sense at all. There must be some way to find him. Of course there is. She has always been resourceful. She can track him down, even if he is in Israel. But if she has to try too hard, perhaps it's the universe's way of telling her this isn't to be. She doesn't believe in God, but she believes in a natural order, a higher directive, to be gleaned and mulled and acted upon. In this way, she and Manny differ. His desires remain inert, stuck in his heart. There is a word for this, a beautiful word that unfurls from the tongue. Velleity, the weakest form of volition. A mere wish unaccompanied by an effort to obtain it. This has never been her way. But the time must be right. Needs must be aligned. Perhaps they were misaligned in the past. Perhaps that was why their relationship fell apart. This time, she is determined, it will not fail. The days billow in and out. Every afternoon, the clouds circle in from the mountains, hunker down over Cuenca, drop their rains before whisking away. The sun reappears, the pavement dries in patches. From her office window, she looks out on the neighboring rooftops, where puddles disappear before her eyes. Week after week, she watches the rains, each drop a flash of light as it touches down, blip, blip, blip. Each blip like the blink of the cursor on her computer screen. And she is mesmerized. The pattern's like a code. And then the puddles dry up before her eyes. And then, once more, it's Essie's birthday. And there is a party with 5 candles, and she and Manny take turns swelling with pride. How can it be that she loves her daughter even more now than a year ago, when she had already loved her then? But Manny dwindles away, preoccupied. And herself, each time she looks in the mirror, a gray hair sprouts, and her body is tired like from treading water.
so restless, says Tia Alba.
And where is there to go? Says Tia Camila. Even when Silvia sends her sons away, they come back, you see?
She pats Mummy's shoulder. Tia Camila has never left the campo.
But Ma, she and Ma are the same, doers of things. Ma, who gave up her family for true love. Ma, who came to America with one daughter's hand in her hand and the other safe in her belly. Ma, who worked her way from typist to bookkeeper to actuary, from third uncle's basement into the life of her own choosing. But when Ma appears in her dreams, this is what she says.
Xiaomi, be careful. You are too much American.
And then one day, at the end of the wet season, it happens. She dials from the office and the connection is crackly. But it is his energy, she feels, trickling into her ear. He is there even before his voice surges through.
Where are you? She says.
New Jersey, he says.
New Jersey? New Jersey, not Israel.
Close to beach. It's beautiful. Everything is good there.
She stretches for words, truthful words. It's beautiful here, too.
What?
It's beautiful here, too, she says,
but so loudly the words lose their shape.
Yes. It's night there now.
Yoni, are you there?
Yeah.
I'm thinking of coming to the States.
She has rehearsed this line to quell any sense of urgency. She tosses it, gently.
Maybe I'll come for a visit.
As if he were still down at the store and she a quick train ride away. As if it were a week ago they saw each other last, instead of almost 4 years. She tosses it. She waits for it to land.
Yeah?
Maybe I'll come for a visit. Yoni, can you hear me?
A click. A pause.
No, he can't be gone.
She shakes the phone up and down, taps it with two fingers, caresses it, coaxes it.
Please come back.
And then he is back again.
Oh, sure, he says. But I'm gonna take a trip soon to Israel. Then maybe someplace out west, Arizona or Montana or Minnesota or something. Someplace beautiful. Maybe I'm gonna buy some land, build a house. Then you come visit. I have a big house instead of a little shack.
He laughs, his big-hearted laugh.
You come visit. I have a big house. Oh, beautiful words. Everything in these words. Come, big. Big enough for her, big enough for Essie. I have, you come, an offering.
She can see it. A big white house with a big green yard, a fence, a dog.
You come visit.
An invitation. A welcome. They had a dog once, a long-haired mutt with a black and tan face. Yoni got it from a shelter on the Upper West Side. She tells herself it is for the greater good. She believes this is true. If she's gone, Manny will find someone else, a younger woman, perhaps, who will love him truly, and he deserves this kind of love, just as she does. And it will be easier if she is gone. Essie is young. She will forget quickly. Better now than later, like Nipa said. So she will tell him one night after their daughter is in bed and he is sitting in the kitchen, relaxed, shelling peanuts and watching television. Side by side with a Colombian telenovela, nothing feels like drama. She will say it bluntly. It's not working out. They fight and bicker all the time. Such negative energy in a household is not good for a child. They will discuss like civil adults.
He will agree. She can go. She should go. It's for the best.
She will bring Essie to visit, of course. Summers, holidays, school vacations. She will miss Mommy and Freddy. Ricky and Juan and Poppy, too. Though perhaps not the others. The others are not so kind.
And with that, it is decided. She will go to Yoni.
She will take Essie and they will go to him. But when she arrives at the casita, the two of them are painting again, adding blue and purple polka dots to the white rabbit on the north-facing side.
"Look what Poppy did!"
her daughter squeals.
No. Oh, no.
This, in plain sight, he will not give up the child.
He loves the child.
The Vargas house. The clay pot with the curved handle shattered into a thousand pieces. His breath on her face like a wildfire. His unsteady hands fumbling with the too small, too many snaps of a yellow ducky pajama. The determination in his eyes.
No, no, no. It will not work. Of course she cannot ask to take their daughter. He would never let Essie go. She will have to go alone. If she goes to Yona, she will go alone. And then she will visit, of course. Commute. She will make it work. She will see her daughter often, summers and holidays, months at a time. And Essie will come to Arizona or Montana or Minnesota. Her daughter, a world traveler. She will love America. She will live the best of two lives.
Back in her small bed in her small room above the Gringo Cafe, she stares up at the wall, plastered with all her beautiful things. A pink coffee cup, dewdrops on a morning glory, a pair of Venezuelan waterfalls.
Well, she could jump on an airplane. This very minute, she could go see those waterfalls. Or someday, she could see them with Yona.
But the next morning, she is once again mired in ambivalence. The heat in her nerves like live wires.
She must shake this off.
She must go to him. She'll figure out the rest somehow. Back in the campo, her daughter, down by the river, hurling mud pies with Freddy, or barefoot, screeching, catching fish with a net. Headstrong, independent, fearless, free. At dinner, sweet, helping Mommy set out the dishes. Essie, at age 5, already starting to read. She turns away, bites her lip.
I will go and come back. It won't be long, hija.
Her daughter is smart and blissfully happy in the campo. She sits with her thoughts on the chicken bus. She knows the drivers by now, the mud, the potholes, the stretches of road where she must hang on tight. She knows how to pack light. Her notebook, a pen, raincoat rolled into a little ball, to keep her canvas backpack in her lap at all times, attached to her belt loop by a silver carabiner. She knows to carry her identification separately, in a flat pouch safely pinned to the inside of her pants. To sit in the front, as close as possible to the driver, to keep a small amount of cash on hand, for candy, for fruit, enough to appease a lazy hoodlum. 3 times in her life she has been pickpocketed. In a nightclub in Panama, a bus in Peru, on the A train to Queens during rush hour. 2 times she has been mugged. A thin gold chain wrenched from her neck at the West 4th subway station. A purse snatched off her shoulder at a noodle stall in Hanoi. She has learned to be cautious, but it is not true to her nature. So it is unexpected when she is jarred awake from a gentle doze to find the point of a butcher's knife 6 inches from her face. Blood pulled to her feet. Stomach dropped like a sack to the floor. She feels cold, freezing cold. Muscles in shock, useless. She controls her bladder, mostly. Only her head feels light. Hollow. Emptied with the exception of a single thought rising up toward the ceiling. No, no. Please, I have a young daughter. She gives up her belongings. Her canvas backpack, a small sum of cash, a brown paper lunch bag with a Tupperware of beef stew, which is violently chucked to the ground. The masked men move on, methodically working their way down the aisle like a pair of flight attendants collecting trash. Then they hop off the bus. Gone. My notebook, she says. From the bus station, her feet carry her straight to the office, where she huddles in the safety of familiar faces, where the interns rush to her side, all sympathy and indignation. Oh, my God!
Are you all right?
Have you gone to the police?
What did the bastards look like?
She can't remember. All she can remember is the knife. Dull gray metal, 10 inches or so, with a slender curved blade, a vicious point. Something wicked from a common kitchen. She is shaken. Disturbed. Her head feels weightless. Detached from her body. Two of the interns volunteer to walk her home. She lies in her small bed in her small room in the city. Today, of all days, that ride of all rides. And how did she miss it when those men came aboard, dark and suspicious, shifty-eyed? The wrong place at the wrong time. Unlucky, a coincidence. Or perhaps inevitable. She shuts her eyes. A siren's wail, the screech of tires, Dutch, German. Fumes, cigar smoke, thick in her lungs. A burning on her skin, real or imagined, she doesn't know. She yearns to speak with Essie. Hear her daughter's voice. But the casita still has no phone. She could call the main house. But then Mommy would answer. Or Tia Camila. And then everyone would know.
A woman running around alone like that. What does she expect?
She crawls out of bed to escape the voices. Creeps downstairs. Steps outside where two older couples, retired American expats, beckon to her.
Lucia, come join us!
She sits for a few minutes in the wrought iron chair with the heart-shaped back. Sips 7-Up through a straw. But their words float, each syllable headed in its own direction, and she cannot follow their meaning. She could be a hologram, her solid self still embedded upstairs. She excuses herself, returns to her room, locks the door, shivering. She opens the bottom drawer of the metal dresser, where she keeps her hair dryer and rubber bands, the bitter-tasting tonic from the curandero, her ample collection of pills. Blue pills, white pills, pink pills, red pills. The white pill, now. The blue one, too. The blue one she hasn't touched in several years, but now anything to help her relax. And 7 drops of the tonic in a cup of water for her debilidad. She throws it down her throat. She climbs onto her bed, pulls closed the shutters, banishes the outside world. She sleeps. She wakes. She checks her clock. It makes no sense. One moment, groggy like she has slept for days, yet only 15 minutes have passed. The next moment, it is 3 hours later. Eyes adjust to darkness. Her stomach growls. She cracks open the shutters, adjusts her eyes again. The cafe tables below are empty. The calle is empty. She falls asleep, and the next time she wakes, she feels refreshed, throws open the shutters. but it is eerily still outside. The moon is out, perfect and round, but the clock says 6 o'clock. She is puzzled. It must have stopped. Time stopped. For some reason this amuses her, and if only it were true that she could pause the time, go elsewhere for a while. She would visit Yona. They'd sit on the bench, chat with the smokers. But no, he is in Israel. They would flood in the Dead Sea, reading a newspaper. But no, he is in New Jersey by the ocean. And they will go for long walks, and Loco Coco will offer to braid her hair. But no. The incident on the bus, it's a sign. She must read the signs, and now she sees it has been distilled for her in the clearest way possible. Her directive, her role, her identity. The words placed inside her emptied-out head. Please, I have a young daughter. For a mother to leave her child? It's impossible. She cannot leave Essie behind. They will go in stealth, disappear without notice. There can be no other way. She will write him a letter, apologize, offer to bring Essie for the summers, holidays, school vacations, like joint custody, since he cannot set foot in America. But he is a man. He can have more children. He can have 20 more children from 20 different chicas. She is too old. She will go to the travel agency in Cuenca, her pockets full of cash. She will purchase 2 one-way tickets. But no, in every plan a hitch. Always one must overcome unforeseen obstacles.
You'll need to have her exit papers, says the travel agent.
Exit papers?
Signed by her father?
But I'm her mother.
The agent shakes his head. No child allowed to leave the country without permission of both parents. Child abduction protections. It's the law.
But I'm her mother.
She stares at him in disbelief, this man in his cheap blue suit and blue tie. She bites hard on her lip. She will not cry. She shifts her stare to the wall, to the ceiling, to the floor.
Señora, is there a problem? Do you still wish to purchase the tickets?
The ceiling, descending, hovers just inches away from the top of her head. She pushes a packet of cash into his hand.
Sí, por favor.
She is dizzy, trembling, plunging toward entropy, and as she steps out to the street, each of her body's limbs seems to have its own mind. She needs a plan, a scheme. She sees how it is, this scheme against women. To make a woman ask a man for permission to go somewhere with her own blood child. For 9 months she grew the child in her belly, and who has the right to say what she can or cannot do with her child? She can forge it, his signature, a simple illegible scribble, a roll of the pen. But the thought makes her anxious, her tank top sopping with sweat. She tries to breathe, relax. Breathe. Relax. She can't. If she gets caught, then what? Then she will be arrested. Then Manny will know. He will know what she has tried to do, and he will let her rot in some Ecuadorian jail to be devoured by rodents and forbid her from ever seeing her daughter again. And then what? All this. For what? She cannot sleep. Eyes squeezed shut, she lies awake. She must align her thoughts, make them straight, fling them like an arrow, abracadabra. Then a flutter of wings. Opening one eye, she sees a pigeon has landed on the balcony. Dirty, limping, with a pecked bald head, it must have just been in a fight.
Poor bird.
pretty birdie. She'll fetch it a cup of water, but when she returns, it is gone. Poor pretty bird, where could it go? Abracadabra.
She knows. She knows. She will tell Manny she wants to bring Essie to visit her sister in Switzerland. It makes perfect sense. In all the years Gia has lived there, they have never visited, and that is unacceptable. Of course they want to go to Switzerland, to visit, to see the sights. The Matterhorn, Heidi, Sound of Music. Not once did she ever resent him for not being able to travel back when they lived in New York. It was a simple fact of their lives, but this time she will say she would like to go to Switzerland, and she will invite him to come because he'll say no, of course, because he dislikes change. He is a boulder of inertia, and he doesn't like Gia, and Gia has never liked him. Well, they don't have a single thing in common, do they?
For how long? Manny asks, frowning.
4 weeks, she says. Essie should learn something about the other side of her family, what little there is. This is true. This is true. This is the truth.
It's a long time.
It's expensive. Doesn't make sense to go all that way for a week. He scratches his chin. She tries to sense his thoughts. Waits, hyper-aware of her shallow breaths, jumpy and frantic inside. Surely he can see the guilt, thick as sludge as it oozes through her pores. She forces out a smile.
You could come too, she says.
The words a dribble, her lungs choked up, a rock in her throat as surprise rolls across his face.
What a great idea, a family trip.
No.
No?
He shakes his head.
No, I wouldn't go.
Then I'll get 2 tickets. The 2 tickets to Newark, connecting through Atlanta, tucked behind her underwear in the top drawer of her metal dresser in the city.
He frowns. It's a long time.
It'll be wet season.
Wet season. It can be unpleasant. All the rain, the floods seeping into the casita, turning the floor to mud, and they must lay down flattened cardboard and wear rain boots. Essie hates the mud.
Mud,
she says. She can hear it now, Essie wailing about the mud. Surely he can hear it too. And then he nods. And she must suppress a shout. A nod. A slow nod. It's enough. She is efficient. When she returns from the city the following week, she brings the exit papers. And when she leaves the campo again, they are signed by his hand. She is buoyant. Giddy. All the world bright and beautiful again. She will miss the trees, the river, the winding dirt roads, the women squatting beside their buckets of potatoes, Vera and Isabel and Luce, Vera's brother's Taiwanese wife with a miscarriage, Isabel's youngest son starting school, and Luce, dear Luce, still dreaming about her cockfights. She will miss the chicken buses, and Mommy, and Freddy. But no, she cannot think about this. The days pass, a blur. In the campo, she tries to tuck herself in a corner, flatten into a shadow, remain quiet, inconspicuous, forgettable. At the office, the interns amplify her excitement. Switzerland. They've never met anyone who has gone to Switzerland. She almost believes her own story to be true.
What will you do there?
Oh, her sister will have plans, so many plans, all kinds of touristy things. She tells no one, not the interns, not her boss, not Mr. Lowe at the Chinese bodega or the kind-hearted curandero, that she does not plan to return. She will work things out.
She and Essie will stay with Nipa while she works things out. On her final day in Cuenca, she takes a circuitous walk before heading into the office. Everything feels new once more. Bye-bye, red tile roofs. Bye-bye, cobblestone sidewalks. Bye-bye, colonial archways and ornate railings and rows of Juliet balconies above. Bye-bye, palm trees and cathedrals and pigeons squabbling in the square. Bye-bye, almuerzo, bookstore, post office, internet cafe. Her limbs feel light, as if injected with helium. Her head floats over her shoulders. Even her eyebrows, her eyes, the creases in her forehead, lured upward by some anti-gravitational force. That evening, she does not go out for pollo con fritas and colas with the interns. The next morning, she must catch an early bus back to Martes. That weekend, she and Essie will make the long journey from the campo to the airport in Quito. She still has to pack, she explains. That evening, she sits, goosebumps flaring on her legs as she makes contact with the cold tile floor in her room above the café. She has never, not once, sat on this floor. And now, as she peeks under the metal bedsprings which have supported her for over a year, she notices the candy wrappers and stray coins floating among the lint and cobwebs and dust bunnies and hair. Her own dark strands of hair. She notices a spider's web, a mesh of fine wires tucked in the corner of the room. Now that she is low, near the ground, she sees the silky fibers glisten in the light like something wet and metallic. She crawls over to examine it. There it is, a small black spider no bigger than a dime. It has not yet completed its task. The web has only radial strands, like a wheel. She bends down, breath so close the strands waver and dance. She watches as spider hops counterclockwise from spoke to spoke, dragging its thread. It fascinates her to see a creature so busy in an act of creation. She remembers learning once how a spider spins its web, about the non-sticky strands on which it sits while it constructs its sticky trap. She remembers reading about scientists who conducted experiments where they fed spiders the blood of severely ill mental patients, and the spiders spun cockeyed webs. This spider's web is a marvel of nature, perfectly symmetric. She pricks her left index finger. A red droplet forms. She offers it, but spider does not seem interested. It is still too busy spinning, hopping, pinning its thread at each spoke like a housewife pegging laundry. She digs out a silver centavo from her pocket. With her right thumb, she presses the injured finger, squeezes a bubble of blood onto the coin. She watches the bubble jiggle, a delicate half-dome. She places the coin on the floor. The voices from the café are louder now, rough and German. She wishes they would stop. She dislikes German, its angry nature, its hard sounds, even worse than Hebrew. She keeps picturing herself at the door of Jonah's cozy beach house, a clapping screen door. A welcome mat to wipe off their shoes. Shoes. Neither she nor Essie have appropriate shoes for winter in New Jersey. Only a pair of tall rubber rain boots for mud. She looks at the piles of clothes she has folded, laid out on the bed. She has accumulated a few new items since she arrived, but nothing right for winter. She is hot, scorching hot, burning hot. She will go for a walk. She needs air. She heads downstairs. The Germans are still outside, their table crowded with frothy steins. The calle is empty. Street lamps cast tall, looming shadows, Geometric patterns pop out from the cobbled pavement, the iron fences, the shards of broken glass on the walls. The walls, gray and ominous, like the dull blade of the butcher's knife. A woman should not walk by herself at this hour. She cannot risk it, not now, getting mugged or abducted or robbed or raped, not now. She must return to her room. She cannot let anything happen to her now. She returns. She locks the door. She will pack quickly, go to sleep, let the morning come and gather her. The spider has finished its work. The web hangs perfectly in the still of the room, waiting to snare its prey. Spider is nowhere to be seen. She hears a sound, wood on wood, a knock. Though it could be her imagination, no one ever knocks. No one knows she lives here except her co-workers and Jonesy. She wonders if he has come to wish her well. More likely it's one of the drunk Germans wandering upstairs looking for el baño. Occasionally a patron does that. This time it comes firmer. Knock, 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 knock. Suddenly she is feverish with fear. An intruder, a burglar, the masked hoodlums from the chicken bus. She swings around, panting. Does she even own a knife? Is it better to yell out, confirm her presence? Will this scare him away? A rapist? But she will scream out the window and everyone below will hear. And if they don't, then she will hurl an object down to get their attention. Her eyes dart, lock on the antique brass lamp on the dresser. She can block the door with the dresser, tie a sheet to the bed frame, drop out the window. No. She is indulging in childish games, hide-and-go-seek, chase, planning routes of escape.
¿Quién es?
She says, deepening her voice. There is no peephole, no chain, so she grabs the antique desk lamp, throws the weight of her body against the door. If she opens it and the stranger forces his way in, she will slam this object on his head, run to the window, and scream for help.
¿Quién es?
She cracks it open an inch, then another inch more.
Lucia? Says the voice.
A woman's voice. All at once, her body relaxes. Why did it not occur to her, silly, that it could be a woman at the door?
Lucia, open up!
It is Miranda, her sister, Gia. She recalls what happens next as a jumbled dream. The figure pushing at the door, crowding into her room, all mouth. You, you, you! Commands and accusations. The crescendoing voice, buzzing of mosquitoes, everything too loud, too many words, and she covers her ears to stem the drain of energy from her head because this is what they want. To drain her, to muzzle her, to take away her power, her feelings, her desires, her will, to shut her up and stuff her into a shoebox and stick it on a high shelf, where she will sit and sit and gather dust quietly like the mental patients of yore. What the fuck are you doing? He's her father, Lucia. You cannot, thou shalt not, like Moses and his 10 commandments. And then her face under the spell of the figure's hot breath, frantic wetness spilling down her cheek. The spider. Where is the spider? Where are the pills? Pills, 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 always the pills. The pills like a leash around her neck and everyone with a hand to pull. It's wrong, Lucia. Too loud, too electric. She lashes out, all arms and fists. You want pills? Here are the pills. And she rushes forward, thrusting the pills in the monster's face as it gags and spits. I will tell him, Lucia. I will tell him what you've tried to do. And then she hears her daughter's name and she goes blind with rage. Get out!
Yes, goddamn it, yes, I am taking the goddamn pills. 4 white pills in her palm, straight down her throat, and she pitches the open bottle out the window. There are your fucking pills. A shower of hail hits the pavement. Lucia! She jerks away, flings open the red plaid suitcase, grabs a tank top, hurls it to the floor, and then all the neatly packed items, the jeans, the bras, the books, the shoes, the hair dryer, at the window, at the bed, at the dresser, at the wall, and then the antique brass lamp at the monster by the door. It strikes on the forehead, and then there is red, red, red. Blood, and the red streaked, too loud figure, a blur. Stop, Lucia! She covers her ears, musters every drop of air in her tightening lungs. You! Get out! Get out of my fucking life! She retreats into the corner, nose to knees, rocks back and forth. A thunder on the stairs. The Germans are coming, big men with rough voices. Her skin goes cold. Please, no. Don't let them lock me up. Please don't take me away.
Chapter 6. Manuel. She started acting different a few months ago. Not crazy, like loco. Not the way she'd acted after Essie was born. But she kept secrets, and got mad if he asked too many questions. Though it was not his way to ask many questions, and he often wondered if he should ask more. What of all those evenings she spent apart from him in Cuenca? Did she have friends there? Were they Americanos? Were they young or old? Did she go straight home after work, make herself a bowl of noodles? Or did she loiter at the office, gossiping, go for drinks with her colleagues until the bars and restaurants closed? Sometimes when they were together, she would stay up late, sit in the uncomfortable high-backed rocking chair in the corner of their bedroom, scribbling away in her notebook. "What are you doing?" he asked.
"Work,"
she said. "What kind of work?" She shrugged, eyes tight on her page, and if he pressed, she'd sigh, followed by a bloated exhale. And this meant she had nothing more to say. These past few months, she'd seemed extra impatient, exhaling often, as if she did not want to expend extra energy funneling her thoughts through her mouth, as if she'd rather expect him to read her mind. But she was patient with Essie, as patient as one could hope to be with a child her age. She cooked her favorite foods, oatmeal not too thin, not too lumpy, chicken soup with the bones strained out, fried rice with green onion and gravy. She peeled her apples, halved her grapes, quartered her strawberries, adding a teaspoon of sugar if the fruit was underripe. She chided her, to clean up, to get dressed, to go potty, to go to bed, but she rarely raised her voice. He had his own challenges with his daughter, who seemed gifted with a limitless energy, who talked too much and too loudly, who dashed and jumped and punched the air, chased animals with sticks and climbed trees like a boy. "Why can't she sit still?" he asked. "What about tea parties and dolls?" He spoke of little girls as if he knew. But he was acquainted with few, only his cousin's daughters who played makeup and beauty pageant and pranced around at family parties dressed in leotards and tiaras and their mother's scarves. On second thought, he was glad his daughter was not like that. He was back in his country, with his family. The work was hard but predictable. Air seemed to circulate more smoothly through his body, in one continuous loop without getting stuck or sucked in or expelled in frantic bursts. The days stretched before him like miles of empty space. He tried not to think of it as dull or view himself as defeated. On the contrary, he'd seen more of the world than anyone else in this countryside. And now he reaped the rewards of his return, puffing up as he recounted stories of Nueva York. Now he walked with his shoulders thrown back, looked people in the eye for the hell of it, because for too long he had looked down or away. The girls, too. Sure, the girls. And then when Lucia decided to take that job in Cuenca, she was gone 3 days a week. His tías tittered, but he tried not to care. And though it wasn't what he wanted, it was what she wanted, what she needed. He wanted to believe it, that she was cured. He made the best of things. At Mami's request, Tía Camila sent over her youngest daughter, his cousin Yasmin, to help with assorted daily household chores. Yasmin was 19, not particularly prompt or attractive or thorough in her cleaning, but she was chatty and had many friends. Luna, with the short legs. Guadalupe, with the stubbly Pepa. Fabiana, who clawed her nails into his scalp and screamed for Holy Jesus the Savior as he went down on her. That shit was hard to take. Mommy liked Lucia, even if she was as confounded as the rest of them as to why Lucia felt it necessary to take work so far away. They assumed it to be some kind of crass cultural difference, like chewing gum or wearing shorts to church. The younger girls, teenagers, liked Lucia too. Joked with her at parties, gossiped about boys, took her into their confidences. She seemed to occupy that rare niche between themselves and their mothers, though they could feel she was constitutionally different somehow. He knew it, too, but it had not mattered to him. In this way, he and Lucia were alike, concerning themselves only with people as they are now, rather than who they were in the past. He helped Poppy on the farm. The animals needed to be fed and groomed and milked and herded. The sprinklers needed to be rotated, the fences mended, the grasses cut. When something broke, he fixed it. When their tools were stolen one night because he'd left them in the fields, he built a small storage bin. He could take care of these matters that stood squarely in his field of vision. And he had learned a thing or two in America, tearing down buildings with Maurice. He could install proper windows, frame a door, patch a rusty tin roof for a neighbor. He lagged on the outhouse because soon enough he would build a brand new casa from scratch when things were a bit more settled, when he had more time. A big house with a proper toilet and bathtub and shower, a kitchen with proper cabinets and porcelain tiles. And after he was done, he told Essie, they would paint it.
Pink,
she said. Sure, pink, he laughed, picturing it. And purple, and orange and blue and all the other colors.
How about stripes?
Yes, stripes.
And dots? Polka dots?
He laughed again.
With a face? And a moon?
Sure.
How about rabbits? You like rabbits?
She nodded.
But Poppy...
They were sitting outside, feeding leftover coconut shreds to their two pigs, Princess and Pea.
Poppy, I want to paint our house now.
This was the thing about children. They couldn't wait. Anything worth doing had to be done right away. He thought for a minute, knock-knocking his fist on the splintered wood panels, weathered dull and gray.
Sure, hija. We can paint it now.
They hopped on the motorbike. Essie clung to him as they puttered into the village, but the general store was closed. Directed by the carnicero to venture 7 kilometers south, he found a neighbor who kept a few gallons of white.
But I don't like white, cried Essie.
It will have to do, he said.
He placed the cans on the floor of the bike, puttered back to the casita. He thought they could start with the north-facing wall. He sprayed it down with the hose, showed her how to buff and sand and smooth the surface with a brick wrapped in sandpaper. The dry wood kept splintering. She grew impatient. He handed her a brush, hoisted her onto his shoulders so she could paint a cloud.
"On the wall, mi amor," he said. "On the wall."
Spatters of paint stuck in his hair. That afternoon, they sat on the front stoop, awaiting Lucia's return from Cuenca. As she walked up the winding dirt path, Essie ran to her.
"Mama, look!"
she cried.
"What is this?"
said Lucia. Her eyes grew wide, her jaw dropped, her mouth formed.